This is A View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Tuesday, the 7th of March, 2017. My name's Patrick Smith. Only one game for the Belfast Giants this weekend. It was a victory over the Manchester Storm. We'll have Davey and Sizz over in just a second to talk all about that. We'll be chatting with Blair Riley about how the Giants are getting on at the minute and looking back at the Challenge Cup final with Gareth Hughes of Icetown TV and our very own Mark Hitchcock. There are plenty of other things to talk about this week, as I'm sure you're aware. We'll cover it all in our Cross the League before looking ahead to the games against the Nottingham Panthers and tackling your fan agenda questions. But we can't start the show until we play this. It's funny what a week in the Elite League can bring you. Sometimes you think you're talking about a cup final and you end up talking about something else. You know, I'm not talking about what you're thinking I'm talking about. I'm talking about Steeler Dan being thrown out of Ice Arena Wales, but we'll come to that. Welcome to this week's A View from the Bridge, joined, of course, by Mr. McGimsey and Mr. Kitchen. How are you, lads?
All good, Paddy, all good.
I thought you were talking about two guys in one cup there, Paddy, but...
nicely done, sir. Nicely done. Yes, there's quite a bit to talk about. We'll also be joined by Blair Riley to talk about the Belfast Giants at the moment. And Gareth Hughes and Mark Hitchcock join me to talk about that Challenge Cup final. But first, let's get stuck into the only game that the Belfast Giants had this weekend, and that was their final game of the season against the Manchester Storm. The Storm came into the SSE Arena having won previously just before the turn of the year. However, the Giants on a rich vein of form somewhat, but they were able to take a 5-2 victory over the Storm. The scoring was opened bang on the 5-minute mark, a Mike Forney power play goal after Blair Riley took a high stick from Cody Carshay. That was doubled by Blair Riley about a minute or two later. And then Colin Shields made it 3-0 with 15 or so minutes on the clock. Upstepped, the captain of the Manchester Storm, Trevor Johnson, to bring it down to 3-1. But in the second period, Blair Riley restored that 3-goal cushion to make it 4-1. In the third period, an all-British affair, as Adam Harding took it from Swindlehurst and Prince to make it 4-2. But the empty net goal from Colin Shields sealed the win at 5-2. Regards to netminders, well, Stephen Murphy faced 28 shots and made 26 saves, while at the opposite end, Mike Clemente faced 43 shots and made 39 saves. Your referee was Dean Smith. Sizz, you were covering, of course, for Belfast Giants TV. You were joined by Boxy and the Giants were never really under pressure in this game.
No, Paddy, you know, there certainly was a few moments when Manchester, you know, that we all know that they can play and there's some really talented players in their lineup. But I honestly didn't think we're in any danger whatsoever. Get off to a good start. I thought we controlled the first period. Disappointing to give a power play marker to Trevor Johnson towards the end, but I honestly didn't think we were in any jeopardy at all. Clemente put off a couple of saves, also make a couple of howling mistakes. That third goal for the Giants, I think it was Sheds that basically put it home. But, you know, they actually looked tired. They played the night before. Giants obviously only had the one game at the weekend. So they knew they could go all out and put all the energy into it. But I honestly don't even think we get out of second gear. I thought we look composed all the time. We give up the two goals again. We win a 1-1 power play, which, you know, Manchester power play has been pretty good this year. If you look at Colin Shields, you know, a couple of goals for Sheds, and we'll go on to talk about him down the line, and I'll leave that to my mate Davey because he, you know, is obviously a bromance there. But, you know, we have guys there who really played well. I thought Big Martinelli again was outstanding. Murph made a couple of good saves when he had to. I thought that Toy, you know, Toy's really slotted in that line with Brandon Benedict and David Rutherford really well. Rutherford was outstanding on Friday night with you know, the cross check with the face the week before from Farmer. Certainly woke him up, and he looked as if he was wearing the outdoor war paint. which was quite funny. But yeah, I think you're 100% right, Paddy. Never in any danger. Thoroughly deserved the 5-2 victory. Could have been more, but you know, most important thing is the 2 points.
We'll come to you, David, and you know, that he says about the Colin Shields goal, obviously a milestone goal for him, but that one, it was a bit, should we say, complacent from Mike Clemente to let that go through him.
Yeah, he's threw the glove up at it, thinking he's just gonna plug it out of the air, and he just hasn't got it quite right. It's dropped down there. Obviously, good high to hand coordination there. Popped into the net from Shields for his 200th goal for the club, and you know, gives us a 3-goal lead. A bit like the game against Fife the week before. You know, when you jump out with a bit of intensity, and obviously that comes from us only having the one game and being prepared the whole week just for the one game. I think we've threw something like 20 shots on Manchester in the first, you know, 20 minutes there as well. So we've came out, big crowd again, got engaged. Our doors, Forney, Higgy, Riley. Another good performance, another good night from them, involving two or three of the goals. And, you know, they worked the puck down low and freed up the points, got the puck back then for the likes of Nicker, especially in the second goal. He just steps in and crushes one, and Riley standing in front of Clemente with a lovely tip in the moment, 2-0. Shields obviously makes it 3, and we sort of go up from there. Manchester get the power play goal. Manchester have a good power play unit, very, very slick pass, and tape to tape, bang, 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 all the time, kept their feet moving all the time, and got shots on. You know, we came back 3-1. I think maybe the last 5 minutes of the first period, we kind of threw maybe, as I say, the guts of 20 shots. I don't think we almost took the foot off the pedal at that stage. They got to go back, and we came out in the second period and just got straight back at it again. And I think it's Riley has chances for a hat-trick as well. I think he's a lovely breakaway, he says, where he takes Clemente. Clemente sticks with it really well, gets the pads down and stops him getting that hat-trick. But I think we'll run up. In the end, I think it's a comfortable enough victory. You know, Shades coming away there with the empty net goal there with only a few seconds left on the clock. Jack Prince had a really good game for Manchester. I thought he was a nuisance in front of Murphy all the time. And, you know, there was positives for them. It's a pity this isn't the kind of Belfast Giants. Okay, we came in, I haven't played a lot of hockey that game at the end of December. Still a game I'll look back on thinking we should have had a better result than that. But, you know, We're talking about this game. I think 5-2 at home, comfortable enough performance, pretty well pleasing night.
I think that's it, isn't it? It's the fact that it was just a comfortable performance. There's not much more we can look at from there. Regards to Manchester, that's 7 losses in a row for them. They've got Brayhead this week. They're chasing that spot in the playoffs, that 8th place. But at the moment, things just aren't going well at all. They've got troubles.
Yeah, I spoke to Pash after the game, and he could see he was really disappointed. He was saying how much they missed Bissonnette, who I'm not too sure if he's made it public, but he really rates him. I think he's a cracker as well. He's been a really good addition to their lineup this year. And obviously, you know, losing, I mean, you've obviously seen him a lot more than what we have, Paddy, living in the short of the storm shelter. But Omar Pasha, you could see how angry he was. Obviously, you know, it's another loss. They lost the night before against the Devils. And then, they come in and play the Giants the next night away and had to travel over that day as well. But listen, we all have to, I mean, the Giants do more traveling than anybody else. So they're used to the schedule. Having one game at the weekend definitely is an advantage. You know, they made that judgment earlier in the season when they were, I think they would like to have played 2 games over the weekend and obviously been in that final. And I did say that to Derek Walzer in the interview after the game. But it was one of those things where Manchester, again, Davies touched on their power play. You know, they've got guys that they can move the puck, but it's not just about moving the puck. Those guys never stood still for the power plays that they had. And the movement was basically putting the chance out of position, but we just did exactly the box. We kept the guys on the outside, didn't really give them any really clean cut scoring opportunities to basically put it past Stephen Murphy. And again, it was job done, but most importantly, job done without picking up any more injuries.
That's it. Davey, you know, you and I had a bit of a, let's say, a bit of a fishing session poking at our old mate, Mr. Russell, on WhatsApp, saying, you know, how they should have, their season kind of ended at the turn of the year. But in fairness to them, since the turn of the year, it's been very difficult for them.
Yeah, they've picked up a few injuries here and there. And it's just that whenever you're struggling a little bit, you know, it's a, losing can become a bit of a habit as well as winning can become a habit. And I think they've just got themselves in a bit of a pickle at the minute that they're struggling to get out. There's clearly players out there. We don't need to name them. You know, we discussed this, as I say, the other day with Coach. You know, we're pretty forthright with each other in our opinions. There's players out there that maybe aren't good enough, and there's players that are playing hurt. And clearly, you know, and there's a difference probably at the Belfast Giants, and the coach will be pulling his hair out what little he's got left, talking about budgets and stuff. But, you know, we are able to bring in a Leduc. We talked about this last week as well, you know, with Jeff Mason, who sat there all season and has ended up playing 30, close on 40 games probably. Whereas if they have players that are hurt, they either have to get out there and play under percentage to what they can normally play, or they have to sit out. You know, they have missed guys right through the season for long stretches here and there for one reason or another. And I just think that injuries and illness and little niggles have caught up with them eventually. And if they don't change quickly, that eighth spot in the playoff could become, you know, ninth very, very quickly.
As you say, what about, we said there just about Colin Shields hitting that milestone, says 200 goals for the Belfast Giants. Once again, just another one clocked up for the man.
Like, again, I can't speak highly enough about him. I know Davey, as I say, he's got his bromance with him. And, you know, he's just an absolute gentleman. You know, he's the sort of player that every team in this league would have wanted for 10 years. You know, what he's done for our franchise over those, that period of time, you know, he leads in points, leads in goals, leads in assists. It's just absolutely phenomenal. And all for a boy from Glasgow, who has picked up a weird accent throughout the years and, you know, kept it going to this level at that age. And I actually think he's fitter than he's ever been before. He looks it. He lives and breathes, you know, fitness, and both obviously with his work life and off the ice, and talk about with TPF and
there's another plug for him. He'll be happy with that.
It's just fantastic what he's done. And, you know, again, picking up that 200th goal on his first goal on Saturday night, and then his 200th goal for the Giants, and then his 250th in the Elite League with his next goal. Honestly, can't speak highly enough about him. He's an absolute legend. It's only a matter of time before his number hangs from the rafters, and absolutely deservedly so.
David?
Says has said it all, really, hasn't he?
Okay, so let's move on.
Look, I am privileged from this podcast, and it was probably more around the time that Sheds was doing the charity drives for the homeless, yes, that I got to know him better off the ice. And as you get to know people, you start to talk about interests, and we talked about stuff away from hockey, and then we talk about hockey more. And I've said before about Stevie Robinson discussing, because in years gone by, Shed's got hammered on the podcast for certain bits and pieces. You know, he was very Marmite at one time. And when you learn to watch different things in the game than just watch the puck and watch stats and that sort of thing, you learn a bit more. So I was more than happy to hold my hands up and say, you know, when time's gone by, I got it wrong about the guy. You know, 20-odd goals again this season, just over 500 games for the club and 200 goals. And as Sizz has said, all the categories he leads in there, it's just, you know, it's testament to how good a shape he's kept himself in, and his passion for the game and his passion for the city. And there's still lots more to come. Still lots more to come from Sheds. I'm absolutely convinced on that. And I would agree with Simon. I can't see anything else but a gap being made at the bridge end there for another shirt to be hung.
Here, here. Sticking with yourself, Davey, the Giants, coming back to the Giants, you know, and we'll speak to Blair Riley in just a second. I open with this sort of same question to him, but the pressure that the Giants have to keep up, the tempo that they have to keep up now, mathematically speaking, we are still able. We do require the Cardiff Devils to drop points. However, we do play the Cardiff Devils twice, and they do play the Sheffield Steelers as well. Therefore, the onus is on the Giants to keep that pressure on and keep that tempo up.
Yeah, I think we can only really focus on where we're at. If you look at the table as it sits now, I think if you'd have been like a gambling man and you looked at the stats over the last number of seasons, you'd have maybe thought 70, 72 points would have maybe even won you the league this season. And, you know, Devils sit with 73 with six games still to go. So you've got to tip your cap to them as well. They've had a very good season. They're running almost at 800 across the course of the season. 8 losses in 46 games. Pretty incredible. Phenomenal. So sometimes you just have to say, you know, there's a good team out there. We're a close second. To be honest, you know, we can get the 78 points. You know, realistically, if we're going to say Sheffield beat them twice and we beat them twice, that means out of their last 2 games, you know, they get 2 wins, they're going to be champions anyway. So I think we just have to focus on what we can do, and that's going out winning shift by shift and period by period, cliche as it may be, and just see where that takes us.
Yeah, I think
takes us going into the last weekend of the season. If we go to Cardiff and it's within touching distance, well, then that's all we can do.
Yeah, they only need, I think, 5 points out of the remaining 6 games, but the Giants just have to focus on their own. And, you know, we'll come to the Nottingham games later in the show, but it's game by game and keeping that pressure on.
Absolutely, and that's the most important thing. You know, you're down a stretch here. You've 6 6 cup finals, basically. And if we win the 6 of those games, then we're going to push the Cardiff Devils right to the very limit. But again, the big thing about it is, you know, Davies already touched on it. The Cardiff Devils have been excellent this season. They deserve to be in the league because they've won more games than anybody else. And you know, as their fan base will tell you, though, they're not shy and coming forward. Look, we all just want to win, and they are in a very lucky position where they've been at the top of the table bar 24 hours, where we went first there back in early February. You know, they've been at the top of the table for 5 months. So, you know, if they go down now and with 6 games to go and they lose this, that's unforgivable as far as I'm concerned. I think that, you know, there'd be definitely changes in Cardiff, but again, the pressure's on the Cardiff Devils as well. The Giants need to go out, continue what they're doing, try and pick up the wins, shift by shift, as Davey says. And again, if we win the 6 games, they're not going to find it easy going to Sheffield. Is it 2 games against Sheffield they have?
Yeah, 2 games in Sheffield against Sheffield.
You know, and Sheffield will be looking at the table and going, right, okay, well, you know, if we finish 2nd, potentially it'll be 3rd with the conference winners, and they think they won the World Cup. Brayhead stepping up to 2nd. you know,
there's merchandise and everything now if you want to buy it, sis.
Absolutely. We'll talk about that later. My God. But, you know, again, the Cardiff Devils, they certainly are in a position that every other team in the league would like to be in. But again, you know, it's up to them to keep it going. They blew it last year. And I think they're maybe a little bit, well, they're in a better position now than what they were this time last year. But you just never know. You just absolutely never know.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on. The highlights from that win over the Manchester Storm 5-2 are available from Belfast Giants TV. Okay. So as I said there earlier on, we've got Blair Riley coming up next with the interview. And let's put that question to him. The first one I asked him was the fact that with regards to the Belfast Giants and the games they have to come, how important is it to keep that pressure on?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, right now there's still a gap between us and Cardiff, but anything could still happen. They got a couple games against Sheffield here still. You know, they lose a couple, or if they stumble up, we know we got them in the last 2 games of the regular season. So we want to do our part. We want to win our games. We definitely want to stay in that that second spot for playoff seeding for sure. That's kind of our main focus, is to be playing our best going into the playoffs, and you know, hopefully we get some help along the way.
This season, I think we spoke last time about this, but this season you've formed a fantastic line of great chemistry with Michael Forney and Chris Higgins. You know, how good is it to have that sort of chemistry with guys on your line?
Yeah, it's nice. You know, me and Forns play a lot on the penalty kill together, and we were put together really right from the get-go, the start of the season. We got split up for maybe only a couple of games all year. Mm-hmm. You know, we're familiar with each other. We got good chemistry, like you said, and it makes the game easier when you you're familiar with your line mates and you kind of know where each other are going to be at all times. And we've had some good success this year. It's been a lot of fun playing with those two guys.
The Jazz special teams are sort of, the power play is starting to come into its own now, but the penalty kill is still very, very strong. What do you think the key to that is?
It's just, you never really know with the power play from, week to week. It can be on and off. And we just kind of felt like we were running through a cold spell, but we were getting scoring opportunities. The penalty kill has really been a strength of our team from the get-go, but early in the first half of the season, we thought it was mostly the timing of the goals that we weren't really getting on the power play. We felt like it was costing us some games there in the first half of the year. And we made a couple switches to a few units and moved some guys around and kind of tinkered with things a little bit, found what would work. And it's been clicking really from January on until now. It's a big reason why we're having success there. And that's going to be important for, obviously, the playoffs. Special teams always play a big factor in tight games. A goal on either side of the PK or the power play can really be the difference in a game.
What about yourself in regards to your time in Belfast, Blair? You've been here since the summer. What's that, 5-6 months, doing a bit of time working in uni as well. What's been your take on life in Belfast? Have you enjoyed it?
I've really enjoyed it, yeah. Really, from the get-go, I've enjoyed the city. I've enjoyed the people, really enjoyed the team and the group of guys that we have in the locker room. It's been a lot of fun. My first time to Europe, it's been a nice change of pace, kind of from the grind of the American League. And like you said, getting back into doing some university and doing some studying on the side, it's been nice to get back into things with the classroom and doing that. Kind of gives you a break away from the game to clear your mind and focus on something else during your downtime. And it's been great. I really can't say enough about the time I've had here, and really look forward to another couple months here. I've got to stick around so almost June to finish up courses, so it'll be good after the year to kind of unwind and get to see a little bit more of the country that we haven't really had time to do during the season.
It's interesting you say about the coming over to Europe for the first time and a change of pace. Obviously, you came from the Stockton Heat, part of the Calgary Flames setup. Is with regards to when you're in that sort of AHL environment, do you find that some players are just looking for that next step upwards and maybe not focusing on the here and now? And whereas when you come to the Belfast Giants, it is all about game after game.
Yeah, there's definitely some differences. Obviously, the main thing that I kind of found was the American League, number one, is a development league for the NHL. And, teams are trying to develop their young players and develop them to get them to the next level. So the focus wasn't always on winning games necessarily. Obviously, that would be nice if you could put them in a winning environment. But, making players better and developing as young talent was kind of the main focus. And when you get to be an older player, like that kind of was the last few years of my career there, you kind of want to be in a winning environment. Like that's kind of what we have here. There's lots of pressure, and that's what you want as a player. You want to be in a spot where the focus is on winning, and you want a chance at winning championships. And we really feel like we have that here. And so it's been a nice change.
So let's look at towards this weekend. Obviously, we've got the games up ahead, and we've mentioned that Cardiff double at the end of the season. But this weekend, the Nottingham Panthers. Now, regards to the Panthers over the NIC, we took 7 out of the 8 points, and you've found a distinct way of getting past Mika Vikman with regards to scoring. What are you expecting from this weekend and from the Panthers as you chase onto the Cardiff Devils?
Competitive playoff type games. We've had some really good games. We've had good results against them, but they've all for the most part been tightly contested games. So I would expect more of the same. Obviously we've had some great crowds here the last few weekends. It's a nice home stretch we're on here for these next couple weekends before we go to Cardiff. So it's a good opportunity to give the fans a good show and some good entertainment here. And we don't want to look too far ahead, so we're focused on that Friday night game. And anything can happen. Again, as we said, Cardiff can slip up, and you just got to keep piling our points up and hope for the best.
If you were at Saturday's game, you'd have witnessed the presentation of the A View from the Bridge Player of the Month trophy, sponsored by Phonacab. We asked you to cast your vote and 705 of you got involved. So, in reverse order, the results were 15% went for Ran Martinelli, 19% for last week's A View from the Bridge guest, David Rilliford, 28% for Stephen Murphy, but 38% went to Steve Saviano. Congratulations to Steve on becoming the fifth Belfast Giants to pick up the award, and thanks to Dylan Cagney for presenting it on the day. With only a few weekends left of the season, stay tuned to A View from the Bridge, as not only will we bring you details of the Player of the Month award for March, but also how you can choose the annual Kingdom of the Giants Player of the Season award. We'll bring you the details on the podcast in the next few weeks, but until then, once again, well done to Steve Saviano. So yes, Steve Saviano, the sixth person to pick up the Belfast Giants Player of the Month award. David, well deserved.
Yeah, I think we went through the nominations last week and said we could have made an argument for any of them, and certainly for another couple. But when you look back at the last number of weeks he's had, you know, I think he was Elite League Player of the Week. I think he was at EIHL Magazine Player of the Week. You know, AVFTB Player of the Month, obviously the crowning glory, you know, the jewel and the crown of those triple crown that he won over the last few days. But yeah, he's had an exceptional month. He's had a good season. Don't get me wrong. Apart from that, you know, I think he's about 50 points in 56, 57 games. So he's coming up close on that point per game. And as this league's got better, there's less and less players on a point per game. You know, it used to be that point per game was, you know, was easily attainable. You know, there's not very many players in this league now that sit at that or above. So, you know, he's well placed this season to come in on about 0.9 stroke one point per game. So, you know, very pleasing season for him. He does exactly what, you know, was sold to us. He would be a speed machine and he would get under people's skin and he would be quick all the time. And as the season's gone on and he's settled in Belfast, you know, I can see big things ahead for Sav.
Yeah. Simon?
Yeah, I mean, my vote last week went to Ran Martinelli. But Saviano has been excellent. He picked another goal up there at the weekend. He's playing, I mean, when you've got players like, Demarais, we absolutely ripped apart.
We did.
You know, I know there's people out there basically saying that we kiss the players' backsides too much and pump their tires. Do you know what? When we basically have to have a go, you know, we'd like to think that there's players out there. We're not here to absolutely slate people. That's not what we're here for. But, you know, Demarais, if you'd asked him in the end of October, was he happy with his form? I think he'd have told you absolutely not. Since the end of October, early November, he's been brilliant. And it's not a, you know, it's the change of upturn of players that we basically added into it. You know, we brought Leduc into it, but it's the stability that the players have had. Demarais, Shields and Saviano have been excellent. From November onwards, they've been brilliant. You know, Shea, we've already talked about Sheds. Demarais, I think he had, was it 11 points after about 25 games, David? It wasn't a kick in the backside off that. But, you know, Saviano has slotted in there, whereas at the start of the season, he was playing with, you know, Alex Foster when he came in, when he wasn't injured. And he slotted in absolutely fantastically. Real quality player, top lad, real nice guy as well. But you know, he's picked up 2 minutes in penalties as well. So, you know, it just goes to show that he's playing in all. He's playing a special team, he's playing a power play, shorthanded. And he still only has 2 minutes in penalties. All round player, and gives everything every night.
But we're ready, and we're ready for Challenge Cup action.
We certainly are, Alan. The colour in this place is fantastic. I guess you don't get a much better contrast than teal and orange against red, white and green. Yeah, you can be the greatest,
you can be the best. Walker might have a try himself here. Bounds having to make a good save. Another fight! What a fight! Hey, with a left pad it was from Ben Bounds. The Devils are on the rush. Here's a chance. Fournier shoots and scores! Gleeson Fournier beats it 1-0 Devils with a fine play up high on Irvin Mustakov. Ferrara sends it out for a big chance. Huge save it was. Was it Ben Bounds or Mark Lewis? Did anyone see it? At it before two Warriors might be a chance though for the Steelers. It's opened up. They score! Roberts down makes it 1-1. Sheffield Steelers have made it level. A play from John Armstrong to get in the zone. He gets smashed though, but still a chance. They score! Matthew Waugh makes it 2-1 Steelers on the power play. Wardlow's fishing for it, but the Steelers manage to get it. No, they don't. Into the backhand try. What's the course with three saves? Just then going all around the net on the forehand. Who saves? Still loose again, though. Mestikov just finds a way to make the save, but he can't really see it. Backdoor play, and Bentivoglio can't get hold of it. The Bentivoglio is there! They sneak through Mestikov this time! And at 2:20 remaining in the second period, we're all tied up, two apiece.
Haddad through traffic, still there, it was Aslan Carney was on the doorstep, and then he got wrestled out of the way there by Zach Fitzgerald. And Jordan Gass loved that kind of play from the defence for there, Fitzgerald. Pressure is ramped up yet again. Patrick Asselin out front. Chances there. They score! Lane Omer puts the Devils 3-2 up early in the third. Lane Omer with time to kill gets it out of the zone. And that will do it as the Cardiff Devils in Ice Arena Wales win the Challenge Cup. That's another trophy for the Devils on their quest for all of them this season, but this time the Challenge Cup is there.
Yes, Sunday saw the Challenge Cup final at Ice Arena Wales, and the Cardiff Devils picked up a brand new Challenge Cup trophy. Maybe we'll talk about that in a second, in what could be the first of many this season for them. Joining me to talk about it, two men who were there, Mr. Mark Hitchcock, who I promise I won't cut off this week, and you've just heard his voice there as well on the commentary. It is from Ice Time TV, Garth Hewish. How are you, gents?
I'm very well, thank you.
Very well.
Thank you very much for giving me this platform to talk to Hitchy. I haven't had a chance before today.
Well, we'll start off with you, Garth. This, you know, what was the pressure like hosting a Challenge Cup final in your own barn?
I was a little bit more nervous than I was before a league game in terms of the production. We've been doing webcasting on the Abbott and John for this is our fourth season doing it, and we've never had the opportunity to do a final, so we were really excited, we were very mindful to make sure that the Steelers, you know, we're gonna make it as neutral as possible. I think we did a really good job of that in the end. I really loved it. It was a nice reward for us for all the years that we've been doing it, and we've always wanted to do a final. All in all, even if the results hadn't gone the right way, it still would have been a fabulous experience.
Nice way you put it, the right way. Actually, was it a neutral environment?
Yeah, I think it was. There'll probably be a fair few Steelers fans who will jump on a bandwagon and say this or that, but credit to the Devils organisation. It was very neutral. It made me laugh, actually. The Devils were the away team, so their intro came on the screen first, and you should have seen the faces in the Steelers block. They were outraged, thinking that they were presenting it as if it was a home game. And then as soon as our intro kicked in, I think everyone realised, oh, actually, this is okay. With the exception of the "we are number one" element of "Wish It's Behind You" being quite embarrassing when we scored, judging by the fact we're not and they are. It did come across quite neutral, and I expected it to be far more Cardiff fans in the Steelers blocks. There were a few dotted about, but we certainly did have a good following down there, which is good to see.
Gleeson Fournier opened the scoring, Hitchy, before Dowd and Wah came back to make a 2-1 at the end of the first. But all the statistics is the fact that, you know, it was a 3-2 win for the Cardiff Devils. But the Steelers held siege. It was 40-19 in shots.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, that first period, I thought we were fortunate to come out of it 2-1 up, and the power play certainly helped. I think we actually outshot them in the first period, if I remember rightly. And it was actually when we got into the second and the third that it was just a 40-minute penalty kill. That's how it felt. But even after the first period, there was just a feel that we were going to be under a massive amount of pressure, and hanging on was going to be tough. And that's exactly what happened. We just didn't turn up. I've been to Cardiff two or three times this season, and we've played brilliantly. Some of the best games we've had this season have been in Cardiff, even on the occasions they beat us. But that was, for me, our worst performance in Ice Arena Wales this season, and it's so disappointing. But, you know, credit to Cardiff. They are the better team this season than us, and they've proved it again.
Guys, 2-1 down at the end of the first, as I mentioned, but it seems to be the way of things for Cardiff all this season, especially in the back end, that you just go behind and have to find a way to come back into the game, which, to your credit, you've done.
Absolutely, and I think it's getting to a point now where the guys are just so relaxed about it. I just don't think it even kind of registers to them at this point in time. The two biggest surprises for me during the game were, for all the talk of Sheffield were playing the night before, Tomo totally cut his bench almost halfway through the second period, and it almost became a sort of 2.5 line activity for them, which I think really showed in the third. And the biggest surprise for me is our shot count in the third. Is it 3 shots on bounds?
Yep, 13.
In our third period when they're chasing the game. I was expecting that onslaught, especially because we scored quite early on in the third period, and it just never came. And I don't know why that bench was shortened. I don't know if Hitchy can shed any light to me on that, but I think Jeff Walker didn't get on the ice until they had the power play right at the end of that third.
Hitchy?
Well, there was a lot of media that came out the next day about our players on the medical table, and I think we have got a lot of bodies banged up. I think you need to commit those players. I really do, unless they are physically unable to get on the ice and play hockey. I mean, for us, our season now, it was all about the Challenge Cup and then obviously the playoffs at the end. The league's done, whether Tomo and Jerry admit it or not, the league is done for us. So, we had players we rested on Saturday night. I think there was two or three of our top players, including Fred, who didn't ice on Saturday night against Coventry. So, these bodies should have been fresh, but these players didn't turn up. And yeah, I guess you'd have to ask the coach why certain players were withdrawn as the game wore on.
A lot made of that game on Saturday night, Hitchy. Did it have any effect?
Well, it's easy to think so, isn't it, and say so. But I think one of the things I said on Twitter last week is if you look at the Belfast Giants as an example, which may as well, it's your podcast. You play a hell of a lot of games on a Friday night at home, and then you fly over to England or you get the ferry over to Scotland and you play a team that hasn't played on the Friday night and you win a bulk of those games. It's hockey and you expect it. Yes, retrospectively, would it have been great if neither team played on Saturday night? Yes. But who have we got to blame for that? Ourselves. We created the fixtures. We created the midnight memories ruling about not being able to change fixtures. and I was kind of in the minority where I was getting a bit fed up with all that crap before the final, to be honest with you. I still think we're always harping on about our fitness levels. We've got a great fitness coach. We're one of the fittest teams in the league. And we still should have been able to last the 60 minutes and give them a real game, which we just didn't.
it was a real back and forth, guys, between, you know, a lot of Cardiff Devils maybe pushing back and saying, you know, it's your own fault. Of course, Todd Kelman came out during the week saying, I'm not going to make a comment on it, and then made a comment on it. It was, it was a sort of a part of the, not a bad blood build up to the game, but it was certainly a talking point.
Yeah, it was. Andrew Lord summed it up for me. He said, the advantage in real terms is about 18 to 20 hours. And in pro sports, is that a significant amount of time with which to gain an advantage compared to what would have been Sheffield playing on Wednesday and us playing on Friday, then Sunday, which is, you know, I think he said three practice days on top. I don't think this would have been a problem if Sheffield had moved that game to a Friday. I think if they had moved that Coventry game just 24 hours before, I don't think it would have been an issue. But like I said, I'm with Lord. I don't know if 18 to 20 hours with the roster of the, you know, the quality that Sheffield possess. Like I said, that's four strong lines. But you man for man, I'd say that it's a stronger four lines than maybe we have. You know, you match their third line to our third line as an example, and there's probably more goals on that. And, you know, as good as Jones and Pickett have been this year, there's better players on Steelers' fourth line. You'd rather have Jonathan Phillips. Again, that's no disrespect to Pickett and Jones who played their part, but Jonathan Phillips has been captain of Sheffield Steelers and won umpteen league titles in the process. So, you know, 18 to 20 hours shouldn't have been a problem. And, you know, John Donovan said before the game he wondered whether, you know, it had got too negative from the Sheffield aspect to the point where it was kind of affecting their own dressing room. They had been given an excuse not to play on that Sunday. Who knows? Maybe it did.
You mentioned John Donovan. They're obviously part of the Ice Time TV commentary team, but I think that game, obviously, I didn't get to see. I saw the highlights, but I read that the webcast itself had a few issues.
Yeah, it did, unfortunately. It should be noted, the stream itself, the actual video part of it, the technical part of it, never went down. The problem was that the host server of the actual website went down. So at the end of it, there was 10% of viewers that experienced problems. And, you know, that's not me saying that that's, you know, an acceptable amount or, you know, that, you know, we just dismiss that. Of course, we you know, and if you had seen the faces of the crew trying to put that right, you would see how much that they genuinely cared that it went down. But like I say, in the end, it was about 10% that didn't, which is a real shame. That they didn't get to see it because it was a great show that we put on. It was worthy of a final. Like I say, it was the hosting website of the actual login part of the website. So it went down about a minute before face-off went. So anyone who logged in earlier than that had a fine stream. You know, local issues provided. It's just unfortunate that 10%. Did experience difficulty.
Yeah, there's a very disappointed. But the Hitchy, looking forward for the Sheffield Steelers from that game, what do you take from that game? Because you look to your fixtures, you've got what six fixtures in the Elite League. You mentioned there that you believe the league's gone. I think a lot of people think that as well. But you do have two home games against the Cardiff Devils and an away game against the Belfast Giants. The Sheffield Steelers could play their part.
Yeah, they could. And I think when you look at the league table at the moment, you don't really want to be finishing as fourth seed because your chances are you're going to get Nottingham. And we may have beat Nottingham in the semi-final of the Challenge Cup, but they're always going to be dangerous. I mean, they're the champions of Europe, for God's sake. So I think we've got to aim to finish second in the league and get that third seeding. I think we can do that. We played well in Belfast this season. And you know what? It would just be typical that with the pressure lifted from Sheffield, we go and thrash Cardiff twice at home in games that don't really matter anymore. I can just see that. I really can.
That'd be great if you could.
Yeah. I'm sure you'd enjoy. I mean, as a neutral, and a lot of people say I'm not a neutral when it comes to Belfast, but as a neutral, I would absolutely love, and I'm sure Gareth would, to be commentating on two big games at the end of the season between you both for the league. It'd be brilliant, but I think they'll have wrapped it up by then. So I'm sure Moose will get a bit of rest.
A small part of me agrees with our Hitch. A very small part.
The commercial side. The neutral commentator, yeah.
Well, Gareth, what about yourselves? You know, that cup is maybe just the first of many this season for the Cardiff Devils, but there's still a job to do.
Absolutely. There was a couple of players actually who didn't want to touch the Challenge Cup. They actually said that they don't want to think that they've achieved anything until the big one is finished, which is an attitude we've not really had in Cardiff for a while. It was quite refreshing to hear that, actually. We've got it in our own hands at this stage of the season. That hasn't been the case the last 2 years as much. We've got a bit of breathing space. 6 games left, 3 wins will do it, I believe. I think my math is correct on that. I would rather, the fan in me would rather have it wrapped up on that final weekend and take the pressure off a little bit, because I think the Belfast Giants are dangerous enough to win 2 games against us. And I think that I'd rather make that weekend a party atmosphere rather than have horrible nerves across it. We'll see. We'll see. I think we can win our 2 home games. We've got Dundee and Fife coming up. They're in a scrap, of course. Well, Dundee especially for that playoff spot. But I think we can win both of those games. And then it's just 1 from 4. Against you two guys, so we'll see what happens.
Absolutely, we're in for an exciting end to the Elite League season, and well, congratulations to yourself, Gareth, and to the Cardiff Devils on winning the Challenge Cup. Commiserations, Hitchy, and maybe that was that two. That's 2 finals out of 3 that the Cardiff have taken over you. Maybe you'll win one in the Elite League era soon enough.
Yeah, well, we haven't had to wait as long for the Challenge Cup as they have for the league, have we? So,
well, on that note, I'll leave it. Thanks very much, boys.
Cheers, no worries.
Thank you very much, Freddy.
Once again, thanks to Gareth and to Hitchy. A few comments from yourselves, boys. I'll start with you. Says the Challenge Cup final, Cardiff, well deserved.
Overall, yeah, I think so. I mean, it was a goaltending duel. I know the score was 3-2, and Mustakov's pulled off an absolute number of wonder saves, really kept the Sheffield Steelers in it, gave them a chance to win. Ben Bounds again does what he does and pulled off some great saves at timely points in the game as well. But overall, yeah, definitely the Cardiff Devil deserved to win the game. They picked up the trophy, and the best fans in the world let everybody know about it. And again,
special group of players.
It is what it is, Paddy. You know, the guys, we'd love to have won it. That's probably the jealousy side of things stepping out a wee bit as well. And it was a really good game. You know, I still don't know exactly what happened with regards to their webcast. Normally, Ice Time TV is excellent and put on a good broadcast for the normal Cardiff games, but not too sure what happened there. And there was a saviour on board who managed to get a stream and cut it out on some Periscope, which was brilliant. But I don't know if he's going to get in trouble for that. If he is, then I think everybody else needs to back him up and say him fair play, because without that, there's thousands of people who wouldn't watch that game. And again, it just goes to show that I think the Elite League sometimes they need to bite the bullet and go, you know what, we screwed up. Front runner is not the way forward. We need to get a production company to come in and do things like this, because otherwise they're going to have a playoff weekend in less than a month, and it's going to be screwed up.
Davey, the game was shrouded in controversy midway through when Steeler Dan was thrown out of the arena for allegedly tangling with a steward. Horrendous.
Sheffield really are the club that just keep on giving, aren't they? I'm unaware of anything that happened surrounding the game. And to be honest, I don't even know the final score. I know that Cardiff won, didn't it?
Cardiff won.
Cardiff won. As said on Twitter on Sunday morning, if they're playing in my back garden, I'd pull the curtains. just wasn't really, and that there's maybe an element that the Belfast Giants had been in it. Of course, it had been there and had wanted to win it. And it's coming on 10 years now since we've won the Challenge Cup. And it's we won a Challenge Cup because there seems to be many guises of the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, what's that about?
I don't know. I have Nottingham pulled the old Lonsdale belt rule out again. If you win it three times, you keep it. Even, you know, it's hard to know because Sheffield won the old cup three times, but they didn't get to keep it. But Nottingham just keep buying them and keeping them. So I don't know. But, you know, honestly, mate, I wasn't that bothered about the game. I didn't watch it. I saw Craig Somerton put it on Periscope, and I watched about 1 minute along with another 150 people, and then stood watching a game on a iPhone from the gantry in Cardiff, wise up, you know, go and play with your kids. So I did.
Fair enough. Right. Well, then we'll move on. Before I do, thanks to Ice Time TV for the audio and letting us play that. And thanks again to Gareth and the Hitchie for joining us. Let's look around the league, gentlemen. And we'll start off, as we normally do, with Dops. There was only one review, and that is automatic. Oh, do you want to sing? Go on, David. You give it to us.
Nah, you're all right. You're all right. That's coach's job's the singer in this band.
That's right. The, there's only one automatic review. The Brayhead Clan's Jay Rosehill was assessed a 2+10 for checking to the head against Dundee on Saturday. That'll be assessed, and we'll hear the response of that in the next couple of days. Anybody seen it? I haven't.
Nope.
Oh, no, mate. Sorry.
Nope. That's fine. We'll move on. There's the sort of in-depth analysis you expect from here on A View from the Bridge. It happened to the Brayhead Clan. We don't really care. Let's move on. looking around the results and news from around the leagues, from around the league, not that many games at the weekend, but those that did take place were highly significant in their race, most notably for those valuable playoff positions. Two teams will see their season finish in 3 weekends' time, but which two is far from decided yet, even for Edinburgh. As we alluded to earlier, it was a bad weekend for the Manchester Storm. They had a tough pair of fixtures against first and second in the league respectively. Losing both puts them in the heart of a 7-game losing streak. Added to that, those teams around them picked up victories to push past Omar Pasha's side. Dundee defeated both the Clan and the Caps for a 4-point weekend, while the Blaze took a stunning victory over the Sheffield in the House of Tin 4-1. A game marred by, that was a game marred by off-ice controversy that we'll return to in a second. Caps had a split weekend, and they picked up 2 points in 5 before losing, as mentioned, to Dundee. The probability of them taking a playoff berth is low. However, mathematically, it's still alive, David. And when it comes to this playoff race, we spoke about it last week, but the twists and turns, especially with Manchester dropping points and, you know, Dundee picking up points and where they're sitting, I can't see where this is going to go yet.
No, it's still very tight at the bottom. You know, percentage win over the course of the season, and Manchester and Blaze are very, very close. I think the Stars are getting healthy again, getting back into a little bit of form. I think the Stars could finish as high as seventh here and end up ultimately with the Brayhead Clan, which I think they'd be pleased enough with, getting into a conference quarterfinal, you know, and taking their chances that way. Not too much travel. Last season, the travel down to Cardiff killed them in the quarterfinal because really, they came within a goal of getting to the Final Four, and, you know, that would have been reward for a decent enough season. Manchester are going to struggle here. They've got a couple of games in hand on the Coventry Blaze. It just depends whether they can get that next win, because I think, you know, as you say, they're in the midst of a 7-game losing streak. Goals have dried up. They're conceding at the other end, and, you know, it's going to be difficult for them, make no doubt about that. You know, coach was sort of felt it was in their own hands, and I suppose to the extent it is because they've got the two games in the Coventry Blaze. But when you're not winning, you know, it becomes each game, you know, the season will wind up very, very quickly. 6 games will go very, very quickly, and they need to get a lot of points out of them. So, you know, I don't really see the league being finishing much different than it is now, to be honest with you. Manchester could get that 8th spot off Blaze, but I think it's going to be between Coventry and Manchester for that 8th spot.
Interesting. Sizz?
Yeah, I mean, Dundee, that 4 point the weekend for Dundee was excellent, you know, against Brayhead and the Capitals. But I think, as we touched on last week, when we talked to Neil, Coach Russell, that doubleheader against Dundee for Manchester home and away series, I think it's next weekend, is going to be the pivotal point, whether or not it's going to Manchester head into the playoffs. And you know, coach said last week that it's absolutely imperative that they reach the playoffs. if they, you know, we've talked about it on numerous occasions before, winning's a habit, losing's a habit. They're minus seven games now on the trot, and that's going to be tough to get out of. Dundee, on the other hand, you know, Dundee played against us weekend before last, and they, you know, they you could just see that they look tired, and we deserve that win. But I think I'd agree with Davey. I don't think the way it is right now, Fife, Coventry, Dundee, I think that's the way it's going to finish.
Okay. Well, I think it's interesting. I tried to count up myself and looked at their fixtures ahead, and I actually came out with Coventry missing out, but there's that many twists and turns that we'll see in the next couple of weeks. It's a real fight down there, and no doubt we'll come back to that, especially considering we have to play the Coventry Blaze next weekend. Team GB, there was an announcement recently in the last couple of days regards to Pete Russell's training camp squad for April ahead of the World Championships in Belfast and a game against Poland leading up to it. Stephen Murphy, Jackson Whistle, Mark Garside and Colin Shields were all included in a side that saw the return of Evan Mosey from the Rockford Icehawks and the debut appearance in the squad of Fife Flyers' Brendan Brooks. David, what's your take on the squad?
Not that many massive surprises, really. You know, you get partisan towards the players from your own club. I thought Toey might have made the 28. No, says probably of the same kind of opinion, looking at his Twitter feed earlier on there. You know, he's had a decent enough season. 28 squad's obviously going to get trimmed down a bit as well. And good to see Wiss getting himself in there. From the Giants' perspective, not really massive surprises. Boxy's injured at the minute. I suppose that has maybe factored in as well. So there was a few surprises as well, you know, from around the league. You know, Hitchie had his own opinions on which Sheffield Steelers maybe have been lucky enough to get in there. Obviously, Scuff would have been, think that every Sheffield player should have been in there, regardless of them being British or not. But, you know, it's a decent squad that could do something here this April, and I really hope they do it in Belfast.
Coming to you, says, we've got a TFA early here from Stephen McBlain, who says, you know, what do you think the GB side announced? Do you think that Matt Toe should be in it? We saw, as Davey alluded to, you mentioned on Twitter earlier in that when the announcement made it, you thought Toe should be in the side.
Yeah, I do. At least in that 28. I mean, I'm looking down that list of players there, and in my opinion, and look, I played with Pete Russell for two seasons. Absolutely top lad. He's been coaching for a long, long time now, and I always knew he was going to get into the coaching because he just had that sort of thing about him, you know. But I was disappointed not to see Toey in and with a shout for the 28. Again, there's three or four guys in that lineup. I'm amused at being selected. You know, Toey's come in. He retired last year. He came in at I think it was late August and earned himself a contract. And I think he's put himself in a really good position for next season. If he continues on, I don't know what his thoughts are. Real good lad, works hard. You know, penalty kill between him and Boxy have been brilliant this season. And obviously Kiefer, you know, getting the ice time as well. So it's one of those things where, you know, there's guys there that see Brendan Brooks come into it. Top player, real top player. Mm-hmm. I thought they were trying to get away from that side of things and try and use more homegrown players. But, you know, you certainly want to do your best. And if that means you can use the laws of dual nationality to your advantage, then, you know, by all means. Evan Mosey coming back from the Rockford Icehawks, quality player, played really well in the World Champs last season. And I'm really looking forward to being in Belfast. You know, it's going to be a week of hockey and in fairness to Ice Hockey UK, they've done a great job of keeping the prices down low. And was it 70 quid for the week?
15 games.
It's for nothing. It's for absolutely nothing. You're going to see some guys here that have played at some really good levels of hockey throughout the world. And I'm really looking forward to it. But whether or not, as I say, Jackson Whistle, is he going to be ready for it? I don't know. I don't know if he's ready for this weekend, next weekend. He's been out for nearly, it must be approaching a month now as well. So hopefully Jackson's going to be ready for it. Garside is an absolute shoo-in as far as I'm concerned, as in Murph and as is Colin Shields. And again, Boxy, you know, he's been out for a couple of weeks now injured. Is that enough to get him out of Peter Russell's thoughts? I don't know. You know, Boxy, Again, you know exactly what you're getting from him as well. Real team player, a real asset to any squad. But, you know, Pete Russell's the guy to pick that, and whatever team he picks, I wish him the best of luck.
All I can say is that a lot of these lads will be avoiding a view from the bridge in the future, because in the last couple of weeks we've had both Matt Toe and Jonathan Boxall on, and both of them I asked about their GB aspirations, and neither of them were in the 28-man side. So,
Sorry? Your fault?
It's the kiss of death, I believe. Anyway, let's move on. Let's return to Manchester for a moment. A press release was issued just yesterday detailing the wish of the parent company of the Storm and the MK Lightning to find operators for those franchises. It appears from the PR that with the expanding business portfolio of Silver Blades and Planet Ice in the Leeds, Bradford, Slough, and Bristol, David, they would like a suitable benefactor to foot the bill of running the clubs. The PR does ensure that they're willing to wait for the right investor, so they're ensuring long-term success of the franchise. Now, the MK Lightning says they're stepping up. They're obviously going to have to up their budget, of course it is, to move into the Elite League. Maybe guidance to them is the Manchester Storm. The Storm themselves, over the last couple of seasons, have seen their business improve. They've seen crowds improve and they're doing pretty well on a commercial basis with sponsorships and stuff. It's an interesting PR to be released at this moment from Silver Blades and Planet Ice.
Yeah, it is, especially, you know, again, with just being announced that it's went from 10 to 12 teams, and obviously Guildford and the Lightning coming in. I honestly think it's a concern. You know, I'm sure Ice Hockey UK know an awful lot more about it than we do, but it's one of those things, Paddy, where, you know, we talked about it either last week or the week before about the, you know, the EIHL got to be commended for, you know, taking that step from 10 to 12 and maybe looking down the line and adding to it as well. And with the position where we are now, and they're saying that, you know, it's if they don't find a buyer, then they'll continue on with it. But if that was the case, why didn't they try and do it, look for a buyer, you know, not so much silently, but under the scenes, and try to basically hunt out somebody who would be looking for a sale? I can't see how a sale of a franchise and then going back in to a rented accommodation for the company that actually currently owns the team. So whether it's the Storm or the Lightning, if you take the Storm, for instance, and the Storm shelter itself, you know, they're not paying for ice time, or they're paying their big massive discount for ice time for training and for games. Is that going to be the case for a new franchise owner who's coming in to basically get a big discount to keep that thing going? Plus, it's the F&B, you know, the not the F&B bad words, the food and every side of things. You know, you're talking about all those things that add up. And you're coming in there, an arena where, or an ice rink itself, where you're not getting the benefit of those add-ons that you know, like the bar and the storm shelter. That you obviously got the food outlets there, and you know, all that adds up in the profit margins. Is it going to work? I hope they do find somebody that's going to come in and be an asset to the team, to the organization, and obviously ultimately to the league. So it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. I just hope that we're going to go down the lines of start next season and the following season with a minimum of 12 teams.
I think, I understand your concerns there, and I do share some of them. I think personally, when you look at it, the actual wording and the way the PR was put, it didn't sound too panicked. It looked like it was just an invitation for investors and that they would choose the right one. Now, obviously, we look at it and you look at the two teams. You've got the MK Lightning who are in the cup final, in the EPL cup final, while on the other side of it, the Manchester Storm are in the heart of a 7-game losing streak and struggling to make the play, or fighting for the playoffs. So to throw up a PR like that will draw different ends of concern. But Davey, you know, we know our mate, Mr. Russell, and the fact that, you know, would he deal with having the rug being pulled from under him if this wasn't the case?
Look, no, I think that obviously any sort of PR like that goes out will bring the negative side, you know, of people's reaction out because they're concerned about their future, their club and all. But I would imagine that the ownership there will do their due diligence. They're not going to sell it to someone that isn't going to take it on, you know, for want of a better term. They're not going to sell it to Neil Morris, who's taken Manchester, the other Manchester club, the wrong way. So, you know, ultimately, there's a for sale sign up at the minute. And, well, you know, investors requested, you know, bring forward your plan of what you want to do with the club and what money you have going forward and that sort of thing and take it from there. I don't think it's, you know, Sizz has said it's concerning, and of course it is when the team, when the league is trying to expand or putting good news stories out there that these teams are coming in, all of a sudden there's, you know, there's estate agent boards going up on different ones. It is a concern, of course, but I would, as you say there, I think Coach would have been out much more vociferously if there was actually something more to it than what there is.
Yeah, I think so. It'll be interesting to see where it goes from there, but yeah, it's one of those things, I think, with UK hockey that it needs to be invested in. There needs to be money coming in, and some guys will go for it, some guys won't. But at this moment, we're going for 12-team league, and we'll see where it goes from there. And finally, we'll pass a few comments on one of the larger stories of the weekend outside the Challenge Cup final. But unfortunately, it's not one that shines the Elite League in a very positive light. As we referred to earlier, Coventry's victory over the Sheffield Steelers was marred by an off-ice comment by David Sims. The usually jovial, well, I suppose it was jovial in this case, kiss cam segment on the screens included what we believe to be a kiss between two men and was greeted over the arena tannoy by Sims, jokingly saying, "That's disgusting. Security, remove them," or words to that effect. I say jokingly because I've no doubt that's how it was meant. I refuse to believe someone in that position can make such a comment publicly and mean it vindictively. However, joking or not, the comment was not received well by many, and accusations of homophobia have been tagged on Mr. Sims. Now, this has just led to the usual Twitter storm involving the usual characters shouting from the rooftops in outright rage. The rights and wrongs are not really up for debate here. The comment was ill-advised. We all know that. It shouldn't have been made. The subsequent media storm included articles on Yahoo NHL's Puck Daddy blog, the Gay Times, Pink News, various other outlets, and Sims did his own video apology on the Sheffield Star website, which, you know, it serves to further the story and delight many of Sims's critics. They're certainly reveling in the pressure he's coming under following the remark. Sims himself, of course, is no stranger to controversy and often courts it in a means to propagate his own publicity. However, in this, it appears what he believed was an innocent, humorous comment was anything but. Where it goes from here? Well, the Steelers issued an apology on their website, and Sims' normally obstinate approach to such comments in the past of this time turned to a more contrite attitude on social media surrounding it. There's little doubt, however, that this is one of the less savoury controversies Dave Sims has been involved in over his long career in UK ice hockey. And hopefully it's one not just he, but we all can learn from. Davey, are there really lessons to be learned here?
Paddy, you know, we spoke, it was either last week or the week before, about David Sims. And my opinion on him then, and it hasn't changed, that away from the pressures of having a microphone or a keyboard in his hand, he's a great guy. And I don't think for one minute that David Sims is some sort of, you know, rabid homophobe or rabid racist. But he is from a different age when people say things that aren't acceptable anymore. There's a reason why Jim Davison and Roy Chubby Brown aren't on TV on Saturday nights anymore, because the world has moved on. And he says as much in that little video piece he does with Bob Westerdale, where he doesn't really apologise. And this is one of the critical points he would have against Simsy in this one. He's messed up badly. Whether what he said to himself, he doesn't see the offence that has caused. People like to be offended at times, and they've jumped all over this. He's in the wrong. Just come out, unconditionally apologise. Go to those LGBT people that have reached out to you and said, you know, come and do a workshop, come and do a bit of education. We'll talk to you. It's, you know, what they want to do. They've reached out to him. Take that on board and realise that you can't say some of the things that you're saying on Twitter, and you certainly can't say it when you've got a microphone in your hand with 5,000 plus people, kids, families, whatever. You have a responsibility. I have absolutely no doubt. And Dave McCammon said it himself on Twitter. If he, in a rush of blood to the head, had actually said that, he said he'd have put the microphone down and he'd never have asked to use it again. And if he hadn't been sacked, I would say, and I'm not calling for Simsy to be sacked, I'm calling for that apology to maybe be looked at again. The club have to do something else here. And, you know, it's case after case after case. He needs to be reined in maybe a wee bit. As I say, the wholehearted apology, and he needs maybe a wee bit of education on what's acceptable and what's not acceptable anymore. Because, as I say, he comes from a different age, but he's living in the now. And he's a responsibility to his club, and he's a responsibility to the EIHL. Because this story going, well, I'll not say worldwide, but it's going back to North America, because there's people within the EIHL community want to push that agenda as well. One, to hammer Simsy; two, to get their message out there that, you know, what they're looking for from an LGBT point of view. So, you know, it's a very, very sensitive subject. It's interesting how he's almost exclusively supported, you know, the Sheffield Steelers bots there on Facebook and Twitter and all, saying, oh, it's a joke and all. And yes, he said it as a joke, but it ain't funny.
I think says that Davey's put it pretty succinctly there, and the fact that it is a case of it's the modern age. You have to think before you speak in these things, and it seems to have come back to hit Mr. Sims pretty hard.
Yeah, and again, Davey said, we touched on it last week about David Sims, and I don't profess to know him. And again, when you're put in that position of authority, when you're put in the position of having a microphone with 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 people, you know, listening to your every word. And let me tell you something, I've heard him on the microphone, and the way he gets those Sheffield Steelers fans up for it, he does an absolutely brilliant job. However, what he did was absolutely wrong. And, you know, when you look at the apology that came out, I think that he needs to take advice on board from a Pete Willards. I don't know if it's they have an external PR company. I don't think they do.
No.
Because the way the word of their the PR come out, the press release that they had from Sean Smith, I think it was.
Yep.
All fairness, you know, they basically pointed out that they've been in contact with LGBT Direct. They're not a bank. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those things where, you know, the LGBTQ community is a massive, massive community. And, you know, you just can't be saying those things. As Davey's already pointed out, it's went to North America. It's went on Yahoo, NHL.com. It's been to, you know, there's a lot of people get offended by certain words, certain phrases, or being called certain things. Now, I'm a pretty thick-skinned person, literally, and not much offends me, but, you know, what might not offend me might offend somebody else. And you've got to take into consideration when you're put in that position of having a microphone and you see two guys kissing, you know what? It's 2017. That's, you know, it's just the way culture is, and it's the way life is these days, and you just get on with it. It's not an issue. As far as I'm concerned, it's not an issue.
Well, let me quickly play devil's advocate here. The word is that the fact that the two guys that did it weren't gay at all. It was a bit of a laugh. That's by the by. We're not here to talk about the rights or wrongs of whatever in that regard. However, you say about, you know, in the modern day, the fact is you can't say this, you can't say that, and that maybe some people from a bygone age or people who have that sort of approach of Lexus Simsy still do it and you just can't say it. But is there sometimes a bit of a hysteria with regards to pushing back? I want to say, I don't want to be sound like, you know, point fingers and say pinko liberals and stuff like that, but sometimes you get a pushback that is disproportionate to the act itself. David, are we seeing that here?
100%. You know, I don't think I need to go any further with that comment. Yes, social media exacerbates everything as well. You know, it blows it up. And something that happens in Sheffield at 6 o'clock on a Saturday night can be news in America, in Canada, at 7 o'clock the same night. You know, the world is connected in a different way now. They've got this, you know, We Can Play, isn't that what you call the sort of movement going on at the minute. You know, I think the Cardiff Devils have been heavily involved. Belfast are looking to get big time involved in that. And those things are a worldwide sort of spread. And it's just bad publicity. It's, you know, it's for once it's negative publicity that Sheffield don't want involved in, because they're usually, you know, that would be a club that would normally push the negative 1B and all that sort of stuff. You know, to be fair, that's not a dig at them. That's just the way that they use their PR, and that would buy into what Ciz has said about they probably don't have a PR advisor as such. But you're 100% right. There's also people that are sitting with in the trap, waiting to snap the jaws closed on Simsy because of things that he said in the past, people he's wound up the wrong way in the past, and, you know, they were waiting to jump in with both feet, give a man enough rope, eventually hang himself. And I think, unfortunately for Simsy in this case, he's made a real bad faux pas here, and there was people waiting on him.
So what...
I think one of the hard things that I think David touched on was already, it's about education. It's about, you know, Dave Sims, who has come out and apologised. It's the way he apologised. You know, as Davey's touched on, it's about coming out and going, guys, I was absolutely, unreservedly wrong to say that. And I apologise to anybody I may have offended. That's an apology. The way he came out and did it, again, that needs to be put. There should have been somebody with a PR background. And all about a took was a phone call. I'm sure as if it had happened at Cardiff Arena or Ice Arena Wales, I'm sure that Todd Kelman would have took advice immediately, if possible, to try and basically find out the best way to deal with it. Not by, you know, going down the line of a half-hearted apology. You can't be doing that. And again, I wouldn't say I feel sorry for him because I don't, but the challenge that he's put himself into, does he deserve the 100% criticism that he's getting at the minute? Yes, because the elite league haven't done anything about it. And the thing that we should be talking about from this weekend past is the cup final. The Challenge Cup final was put in place between the Sheffield Steelers and the Cardiff Devils. But I haven't seen it mentioned because of this story has taken over worldwide. Internet is an absolutely wonderful thing now. You can get in touch with anybody. We're sitting Bristol, Manchester, Belfast doing this podcast. It can go anywhere in a very short space of time. And this story that has come out is not doing the elite league any good whatsoever, especially at a time when they are looking for a sponsor for the league. And they are trying to basically try and get TV companies to come on board and maybe potentially film the playoffs in another month's time. It's not doing any favours at all, and it needs to be dealt with 100% correctly in the correct manner, and an apology coming out from Dave. And again, I think he's capable of doing it. You know, he's not shying in the basically the Twitter side of things and social media. And he usually goes on and does his own videos. Well, do you know what? Sometimes you need to go on your own video and put a sincere apology out. And that'd be, you know, I would say be over and done with. I don't think it'll ever be over and done with, because I think people, again, will be offended by certain things that certain people say.
I think that's the way it is. I think that, you know, in the world today, you could say he could come out and give a full and frank apology, and some people will say fair enough, and some people won't believe him. You've got the fact that normally in this situation, he's quite obstinate, and he has, to be fair to him, he has seemed to, obviously he's got word in his ear, the fact that no, this could get pretty big, and he has become a little bit contrite. When you look back, he was more or less, you know, people need to move on in the world, or it's a nothing thing, and he has, you know, sort of taken it, he's been quite quiet on it, but anything else he's put out has been quite contrite. But Ciz, I'll finish with yourself. Where do they go now? How does this come to an end? Does it fizzle out, or do the league make a statement, or is there a something big has to be done?
I think the league need to make a statement. The Sheffield Steelers have already put a statement out, and I don't think they're going to comment anymore. I've seen a comment on either Facebook or Twitter earlier on, and that they said that's all they're going to say on the matter. Again, you know, whether there's the community, the LGBTQ community in Sheffield, have been in contact with them to offer I don't know if it's counselling or if it's education, and try and help, you know, the situation. You know, because I've no doubt that there is, you know, fans that go to elite league grounds or elite league rinks, sorry, who are of the persuasion of being gay or straight or black or white. It doesn't matter. There's going to be somebody who's going to be offended, and somebody saying something, whether you think it's trivial or whether you think it's quite serious. I might not think it's serious at all. You might, again, you can't keep everybody happy, and that's not the position that we're trying to basically do at this moment in time. The problem is it needs to be dealt with 100% correctly if there's a mistake being made. And at the minute, the Elite League have sat in the background while this has gone viral. It's on Yahoo, NHL page, yet the AHL have said nothing. And that's the bit that they should be taking professional advice on and going, right, okay, let's deal with this. Would Seth Bennett have done something? I'm not having a go at Craig and Rob here, because I'm pretty certain they've been told, say nothing. Would Seth Bennett have dealt with it differently from a background of being a professional journalist and taking advice on it? I think he would have.
Anything further to add, David, before we move it on?
No, I think we've kind of said what needed to be said, or maybe said more than needed to be said.
Okay, right, time for the fan agenda. In association with Belfast Giants TV, what should we be talking about? I'm looking through the questions, and quite a few we've actually dealt with already. Leona McClintock asking about Sims. Steve McBlain, we mentioned earlier, with regards to Matt Toe. Let me see. We got one from Carl's Kitchen. Insta Methody for the Schools Cup final.
Inst.
David?
Sponsored by Funicab.
Oh dear. Colin 75. No comment, David?
No opinion.
No opinion. Colin 75. If Walser doesn't come back next season as coach, who would you like to see as coach? David.
Mike Babcock.
Sis?
Scotty Bowman.
Is that a real concern? Do you think that Derek Walser, given how we've spoken to him this season so far, would go? Do you think it is a real possibility?
I think, well, I go first, and that says I think from dispatches and listening to interviews and listening to him, you know, I think he'd love to stay.
Yeah.
Ultimately, franchises and organisations are judged on the number of banners they hang, and, you know, it's been now 3 or 4 seasons since we put anything tangible in the trophy cabinet, and, you know, that's something that'll be factored, I'm sure, by the head of hockey operations and people above him as well.
Yeah, but you said it yourself earlier in the show as well, that the fact that maybe 72, 73 points in seasons gone by would have won us the league. Now, this year we've got Cardiff, who are, let's say, on a phenomenal season, that we had maybe, you know, we had 89 points when we won the league, and we streaked away and beat Sheffield by over 20 points. So to gain 72, 73 points, if we gain that sort of thing, okay, we didn't win the league, but, you know, I think it would be harsh to say for the organisation to say we haven't won anything in 2 seasons and it's time to go.
I think it'll be a factor. I don't think it'll be the be-all and end-all, but I do believe it will be a factor. You know, talking as a fan, ultimately you want to see success, you want to see silverware, and, you know, this has been, for all intents and purposes, a pretty successful season. We were a wee bit streaky at times. We lost games in that October, early November time when things weren't going well, but we galvanised and we came back with an unbelievable run. And it would be hard to say that during that run we weren't the best team in the league by some distance. We've been to every arena and won in every arena this season, haven't we? You know, we've beat Sheffield and Sheffield, haven't we?
Yep. So,
you know, we've been the that old Road Warriors tag again. You know, we've been good this season, and our position second in the league with 6 games to go, 717 percentage over the course of the season, 2 of the best netminders in the leagues, 20 plus goals from 1, 2, 3, you know, 4 guys and another 2 with 18 goals there, you know, so it's been a good season. But ultimately, hockey teams and sports teams the world round are judged on, you know, what have you done for me lately? And that's just a fact of life.
Simon?
Yeah, I mean, I think Derek, I think, you know, I think he does love Belfast. You know, his family are settled here. They're enjoying life. But again, I agree with Davey. You know, every coach or organization is judged by their success, and again, you know, we're still in with, again, if you ask me about the league, I do think the league's out of reach now. I hope I'm wrong. I genuinely do hope I'm wrong, but I do think it's out of reach. However, the playoffs are still there to be played with. If he wins the playoffs, do we see that, you know, I'm staying for another year? I think he'd love to stay. But again, totally up the organisation. If he was to get a better offer elsewhere, I mean, he's still got, you know, we all know he's a quality player. Does he want to concentrate on coaching alone? I don't know. It's a question we'll need to ask him. And certainly need to ask Steve Thornton as well. So I think it's a real difficult position, because there's still six games to go in the league and potentially four for the playoffs. So ask me in 10 games time.
You mentioned the playoffs there, and one of the things we actually asked everybody on Twitter was to answer a question for us. We are 1 month away from the playoff finals, and we asked everybody to name who they thought at this stage would be the final four in the NIC. Stevie Belfast Hill says Sheffield, Cardiff, Brayhead and Belfast. Keelan Deeney said Devils, Clan, Giants and Panthers, whereas Matt Patton went for Cardiff, Belfast, Steelers and Blaze, who he sees getting through. Rand Donaldson, Cardiff, Belfast, Brayhead and Sheffield. What about you boys, Davey? What about yourself?
Oh, well, judging on what way I think it'll finish, I think Cardiff will beat Manchester or Coventry in a quarterfinal. I think that Brayhead will probably just have too much for the Stars. Belfast over two legs will beat Fife 21-18. And Sheffield and the Panthers, my goodness. That is too tight to call, but I think Steelers just have too much for them.
Okay.
Too much firepower. And if they can get Moose in good form, like he could apparently play on Sunday, I think they'd just have too much. So Cardiff, Belfast, Sheffield and Clan.
Yep, so I'll jot that down. Cardiff, Brayhead, Belfast and Sheffield. Sis?
If it's judging by those 1-8, the way Davey said, I think Cardiff will take... if it's Manchester, I think Cardiff will beat Manchester. If it's Coventry, I think Coventry could cause them problems, because Brian Stewart gets better and better and better as the season goes on. So that one, I don't think that. And don't forget, you know, we've won championships, the last one 3 years ago, and we went on a run which you really didn't want to go on. You know, we've been average of the next season after that. I just think that could be the biggest stumbling block within the 1-8. Coventry have it in them to beat Cardiff. They've already done it this season. So Coventry, if they play Coventry, if they play Cardiff. Brayhead, Dundee, again, I think that's going to be a real, real tight one. Real tight one. There's been a couple of surprises. Hull made the final four a couple of years ago. Fife made them last year. I think Dundee could beat Brayhead. So Coventry, Dundee. I think Sheffield will have too much for Nottingham. And I think we're capable of beating Fife.
So Coventry, Dundee, Sheffield and Belfast.
Dundee, Sheffield and Belfast.
Well, at least we know that Mark Lefebvre will be there to buy a couple of pints for Davey.
I think he'd be over the moon for me. Bam, pint, gets to the final four.
Well, yeah, keep those suggestions. Who you think the final four?
What about you, Patrick?
Nah,
come on.
I thought I was going to get rid of it. I was going to go for Cardiff, Brayhead, Belfast and Nottingham. I think Sheffield are going to get knocked out by Nottingham. They're going to find it right at the end. So I've got that jotted down. So I'll keep these jotted out, and we'll come back to it in a month and we'll see who was right. Thanks to everybody for your questions on the fan agenda at AVFTB on Twitter, hashtag TFA. And let's look ahead to this weekend's games, Friday and Sunday, because the Bee Gees are playing on Saturday, taking place at the SSE Arena against the Nottingham Panthers, Friday at 7 p.m, Sunday at 4 p.m. Of course, the Panthers are still trying to jostle a little bit for a playoff position and solidify their place. I think it would be in, what, fourth or fifth seed? Davey, I'll start with yourself. You love the Panthers. What do you want?
What do I want? from the two games, four aye. Points, and a bit of humiliation for the Panthers would be great, because that's what I want pretty much every day when I wake up. But you know, let's be realistic here. Going to be two tough games. You don't know really which Panthers are going to turn up. We've played really, really well against them this season. We've had their number. We've almost bored them to death with, you know, a really structured style of hockey, and I love that. I love the tactical element of the game, and we talked about certain little plays that we've set up and obviously worked on over the course of the season against them. Special teams will be key, and they've got David Clark back, who they've missed for a long period of the season. You know, says me on reflection, maybe went slightly overboard on how much we like him last week, but you know, he's a pivotal player for them. You know, you can't give him space in the top of circles there. He can rip a game to shreds in no time for you. But you know, he's their big game winner. I don't know whether Jason Williams is actually coming back or not, and Beekman's good in goal for them. You know, they're a handling match, but they've nearly lost as many games as the one this season. It's kind of one of those times where I think we're well placed to put the Panthers away two times over the weekend. You know, we seldom do well back to back. We seldom do well on a Sunday afternoon in the Odyssey. It's or the SSE as it is now. It's just one of those little anomalies. Sis has asked me to pull up that, so I haven't got around to doing that yet. But I hope for 4 points.
Simon, have you had your tickets to the Bee Gees?
No, I've got to go to the egg chasing on Saturday night. I've not looking forward to that at all, but anyway, I have to. I think Friday and Sunday will be, we've had a pretty good season against the Panthers, and, I think they'll be trying to get a run together before the end of the season, like ourselves, to, you know, put them in a good bit of form before they go into the playoffs. So I think they'll be very disappointed the way their seasons went this year. Corey Nielsen being European champions and all that, that's fantastic for them, but going into the playoffs with a losing record, are they at 500, Davey? I don't actually know.
560.
So
119 lost 16,
you know, but the thing about the Panthers is that they've got the players within that locker room to basically put off a result against any team in this league. So if we're prepared, you know, they'll be coming in Friday morning to play Friday night, and then they've got a rest day on Saturday like ourselves. They don't have to travel. So it's going to be two tough games. I've just actually noticed I'm wearing two odd socks all day. Sorry.
That's the sort of insight you get here on A View from the Bridge.
I think we're going to pick up 4 points.
Well, those games and more information on Sis's socks will be available on Friday and Sunday down at the SSE Arena. Bring some socks down for Sis and you can pass them on to you if you can see them. That's Friday at 7 p.m, Sunday at 4 p.m, and of course, if you can't get down there, you'll be able to catch it on Belfast Giants TV. Any other business, boys?
Yeah, there's been a bit of interest over the last number of months/years of an official supporters club at the Belfast Giants. There's been a couple of people have had a chat about it, myself included, and we've asked a question. We managed to jump on the back of some good work that was done at the weekend by the Giants in a signing session mid-game, so in between periods. Jackson Whistle, Alex Foster and Boxy went out and stood on the bridge, had a view from the bridge
for
the game, and they managed to put together a number of they managed to basically make a lot of fans very happy who don't normally get to watching them do the autographs after the game and meeting them after the game due to whether they have to go home early or whatever it may be. So what we did was we had a questionnaire, which was put together by Poppy Harvey. Thank you very much. And we asked the fans if they would be interested in this. And the feedback we got was very, very positive. So we're going to go down the route of having another chat in the next week or so and try and put something together for next season as an official supporters club. So we'll be backed by three or four, maybe five different events next season that all the players will be attending. They'll not have an option of pulling out of them. They'll basically be asked to, by within their contract to a certain extent, to attend these functions, which will be for supporters clubs only members. So, you know, we'll put the message out there to all the season ticket holders over the next, probably next month or so, I would say. I would like to try and get something out. Obviously, we've got an extra week of hockey with the GB coming in for the World Championship. So hopefully we can maybe pick up a few more fans that are coming to come along to the games itself. So hopefully we can get something together. We spoke to JK coaches, and they're very happy to put together packages for next season for travelling as well. And you know, if we can get those guys for maybe over in a couple of overnighters, depending on the schedule next season as well, it's all looking up, and maybe hopefully get a bit more access to some of the players next season as well.
Fantastic. I think that, you know, there has been supporters clubs in the past, an official supporters club in the past, and, you know, it's great to see that that's coming back again, because, Davey, that's sometimes that could be a real significant part of an organisation.
Can shake them down for a few quid as well. It's always of some benefit. But no, I remember back, I mean, Theo's season, or maybe the season after. So Mike Menard certainly was around. We played a bit of golf with him. We went a few 10-pin bowl nights, and all those things are little memories, especially when you're a bit younger and stuff that stick with you. And, you know, I remember playing Pirates golf with Jason Ruff, and it got very, very competitive. And all those, they're good nights out, and it's a little bit of exclusivity for you as well. As you know, you get to meet these guys away from, you know, a lot of these people. You couldn't tell what they look like if they don't have their hockey gear on, and you know that gives you, you know, you get to know the man behind the mask, if you like, and that's good as well. And I think it helps with your hockey watching experience when you actually meet these guys and realize that they're regular guys and they're doing a job, and they feel criticism and they feel pressures and all like everybody else does. And it's good to meet them away from the rink and to have a bit of a relaxing time. Should it be a pub quiz? Like I say, should it be 10-pin bowl night? So credit to everybody that's trying to get it off the ground, and hopefully it works.
Yep, absolutely. We'll keep you up to date here, and sure says we'll keep us up to date with any more information. All right, then, we'll wrap it up there, boys. Thanks to Blair Riley, Gareth Hewish, Mark Hitchcock, the IceTime TV for the audio they let us use earlier on the Challenge Cup. And thanks very much to you two gents, as always.
Thanks, David.
Cheers, says.
Those two games, as we said, on Friday and on Sunday, 7 p.m. on Friday, 4 p.m. on Sunday. Get yourself down to the SSE or tune in on Belfast Giants TV. And wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey. And we'll catch you here next time. All of you from the Bridge.